You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Give the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, children of all ages, to The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, where we bring you every week on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time, right here on RadioAryan.com, the news and political commentary you won't hear anywhere else, from a perspective just to the right of Dr. Joseph Mengele. With us this week on The Rope Report is one of our very first telephone interviews. I've had a few interviews here at different live events on The Rope Report, but we're going to attempt, if technology will cooperate with us, to actually do a telephone interview. And when I began discussing having co-hosts and guest slots here on The Rope Report, I asked for you, dear listeners, to give me your input and your advice on who you thought would make a good guest on The Rope Report. And there were a lot of varied responses. Some of you requested that I actually interview Sven, and some of you wanted me to have an interview slash debate with Harold Covington. But the volume of request for the first interview, or perhaps that's not the correct unit of measure to actually refer to this through, the mass of request for my first interview here on The Rope Report was for Chris Quimby, who is the co-leader of the Shieldwall Network and my strong right hand in the Shieldwall Phalanx, who helped me to found the Shieldwall Network a little bit over a year ago. But that wasn't the beginning of our association. Chris and I have worked together as friends and as comrades in our shared white nationalist struggle for the survival of our people, to carry forward the 14 words that we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children for almost two decades now, really almost 20 years. And so the massive volume that I had of requesting Chris be interviewed was from Heidi Byrick of the SPLC. And that's why I refer to it as being both mass and volume. Heidi was desperate, in fact, to hear Chris's voice and have an opportunity to get a closer reach for him, actually, maybe literally. But, you know, Heidi's fascination with Chris is legendary. She actually probably only reads The Rope Report and only listens to the podcast in hopes that she might hear his name mentioned. So I'm going to satiate Heidi Byrick of the SPLC's appetite tonight. With us this evening is Chris Quimby. How are you doing, Chris?
I guess I'm doing all right. Hi, Heidi.
That's good to hear. Like I said, you know, for our listeners who may not know you personally, you and I have been friends and worked together for literally about 20 years. And I was trying to think today as we talked about doing this interview of when we actually met. And I think that, you know, we communicated at the very beginning of the internet online. But the first time that we actually met was when we were working together to organize activists here in Arkansas. At the time, I had, you know, just recently joined the National Alliance National Office, I believe, and you were at that time one of the state leaders, or the state leader in Arkansas, for the World Church of the Creator. Is my memory correct there?
Yeah, I don't know about the part about you just joining the National Alliance, but everything else sounds accurate.
And you were with the World Church of the Creator at the time under Matt Hill, and then I guess shortly after that, you went up and participated in a documentary with Matt Hill, of course, before his arrest, and he asked you at that time or shortly after if you would consider being the Hostis Primus, which is, I guess, basically the second in command of the World Church of the Creator. And I've often thought of how history might have been different had you had the opportunity to take that invitation and to become his second in command, perhaps once he was, well, you might have been able to give him better advice and keep him from being in prison. But if he had been arrested, you might find yourself today in charge of a World Church of the Creator, which would not have gone downhill as it has under its current lack of leadership or under its misleadership. But I guess it's one of those, what ifs that we'll never know. But, you know, you and I, through White Revolution and now through the Shieldwall Phalanx, even before, you know, we've traveled around the country together and been through a lot of protests and rallies and demonstrations, had a lot of adventures over the last couple of decades. And I guess if you were to think back to all the adventures that we've had in public rallies and things, what would you say would be one of the most exciting times, or the most, you know, thrilling times, maybe dangerous times that you remember most from our days of early activism?
Definitely the very first White Revolution rally in Gainesville, Florida would top of the list. Matter of fact, that was the most dangerous, thrilling rally I've ever been in attendance of. It was definitely, I wouldn't really call it fun, but it was exhilarating. We were neck deep in commies. Was definitely, I don't know, we could have done things a lot different, but you know.
Well, you know, we did not have...
Nobody died,
and nobody got arrested at that time, although you were arrested at another actual anti-immigration demonstration that we had here in Arkansas. We did three in one day, did trifecta, and I think the last one that we had of those three anti-illegal immigration demonstrations that we had in that one day, you actually ended up getting arrested for. But as far as Gainesville, we didn't have 10 grand to buy our little secure room like some people who are multimillionaires have. We literally did it on an open corner of the street facing the University of Florida Gainesville campus there, and I guess police were going to show us what would happen, so they did not have any separation between us and the counter protesters at all. They literally were just like shoulder to shoulder with us, up in our face there, right in the middle of the sidewalk, literally touching us.
Oh yeah, literally touching us, spitting on some people. I recall escorting a elderly gentleman who was walking via a walker, and I remember escorting him out of the area because the police would not do it. So I remember them spitting and hissing and telling the old man to die. That's stuff like that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Right.
Commies are very sick individuals, you know, they have zero tolerance for anything but their own ideologies, and it's, you know, it's evident that they want everybody but themselves dead.
They absolutely do, and they especially want all of us white people dead, and our children to be either mulattoes or homosexuals, and then extinct as well. So, I guess probably on the opposite end of the continent, you know, we also did a event in the desert of Arizona, just north of Phoenix. And you and I were there with Pastor Richard Butler and with Tom Metzger and with other leaders of the movement at that time, with Volksfront and WAU. And so we've been from one end of the continent to another over the last 20 years, all points in between, including Topeka, Kansas, and the 50th anniversary celebration of the Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka protest that we held there. A lot here, of course, in our native state of Arkansas. But I guess that one in Gainesville, I guess being the first White Revolution one that we did, is going to stick in our memories probably forever. Even no matter how big of a protest or demonstration we hold in the future, or how successful we are in the future, that was kind of where we got started, you know, working together side by side. But we've had a lot of funny adventures.
I mean, we did spend at least probably a good 2 years in the National Alliance together, so...
Yeah, and a lot of demonstrations there, you know, from northern Georgia, the Gainesville and Dahlonega area, and, of course, the U.S. Capitol in August 2002, York, Pennsylvania, and then a lot actually combined with white power rock concerts to draw people to them. And we had those larger ones there with the NA as well. And I guess that's what really got me started in holding public demonstrations and rallies, to be able to get our message out through the controlled media and what we call white power jujitsu. But is there any particular time or event that we've held over the last 20 years that I guess was the funniest to you, or the most humorous in retrospect?
Funny? I don't think too many of them were very funny. Just seeing clowns running around, or very strange individuals in some of them. But you know,
we did have some unusual comrades and some unusual allies and some strange and even weird enemies. Most of them have fallen along the wayside, but just remembering.
Oh, you want to talk about funny? How about the one in Conway, Arkansas, when we protested the gay pride parade?
Right.
That was kind of funny.
It was. They're having a gay pride parade in Conway, Arkansas, and we went. Do you remember some of the signs that we had?
I remember my oldest son having a sign in his hand that said "Free the Gerbils." I also remember the Fed informant's wife holding a sign that said "It's toad suck days, not cock suck gays."
Yeah, kind of radical. And then we had some that said, of course, the classic, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and thanks for not procreating. Yeah, that was fun. The National Squirming Out Day, we had it.
Yeah,
Toad
Suck.
That was
fun. That
was fun.
That was a fun one, though.
But, you know, we're still swinging. For some reason, National Alliance published an article yesterday that talked about the German embassy in 2001, where I got beautified a little bit with a tire tool over my right eyebrow, and I guess they were reprinting that because it was one of Dr. Pierce's American Dissident Voices podcast, but kind of reminded me of that event as well. So they've not always been safe, but we've survived them all. We're still here and still kicking and still swinging. And
William just wants you to come back to the National Alliance.
You think so? That's his way of trying to recruit. I don't know if it was him or Kevin Alfred Strom. But, you know, fat chance of that happening. No, you know, seriously, you know, we're still here, and it's kind of a different era. You know, the internet and the rise of the millennial generation has led to the rise of this thing called the alt-right. The alt-right being people who are younger than me and you. And, you know, we often have talked about that 10 years ago when we went to a meeting that we would be the youngest people there. It'd be a whole bunch of old people sitting around complaining about why things weren't still 1950. And now, literally, we are surrounded by a lot of people younger than ourselves and find ourselves to be the elders of the tribe, sometimes the oldest people in the room, not always, but much more than it was a decade ago. And so with our position of perspective and experience and activism and decades, literally, we have been in this game, in the white nationalist movement, longer than a lot of these alt-right kids have been alive. But I wonder if you just take a couple minutes and talk to our listeners about your perspective about the alt-right, what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, and how they can or should improve themselves and their message, and how they can improve the alt-right as they grow in their maturity.
Well, first off, I'd like to say, speak for yourself, Billy. I think I'm pretty young and handsome right now. I'm
gonna
stay that way.
Yeah.
None of these alt-right kids are going to outshine me. I guess some of the things that the alt-right's doing right, they have a lot of the propaganda right. That's a good sign. You know, it's always a good thing that they have, not the knowledge. The knowledge is the most important thing. I mean, you know, if you don't have the knowledge, then you don't have a movement. Some of the bad things, I think, would be their attitudes towards those that came before them. They totally neglect the fact that there were white nationalists that came before them that, you know, they get all this knowledge from. They don't even acknowledge the fact that, you know, we created this knowledge. We've been creating it for decades. And they just, I guess they feel like they, you know, I don't know, fell into a secret well of knowledge somewhere and discovered all this stuff. And voila, you know, we're all right, you know. So their attitude towards, you know, the people that, you know, the white nationalists that came before them, it's almost despicable in some instances. It's not all of them. It's a small portion of them, but still, you know, you can read it when they talk about boomers and, you know, I don't really hear anybody talk too much smack on Gen Xers, but, you know, it's just they have total disrespect for the generations. And I can understand it to an extent as far as how they feel the previous generations have allowed things to collapse.
And you know what? One of the things that they always say is, you know, WN 1.0, you failed. Now move aside, step out of the way, and let us do it.
Yeah, you know, it's silly stuff like that. You know, you guys, you know, think you know it all, but I'm referring to the alt-right. You guys think you know it all, and you can't even, you know, pull off, you know, demonstrations without, you know, crap going wrong. So, you know, maybe it's you guys that need to take a back seat and watch some professionals do it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely that we all should realize that the only way that we can see as far as we can is by standing on the shoulders of giants. And they call us WN 1.0, but, you know, you and I are not WN 1.0. We grew up learning from Dr. William Pierce and Pastor Richard Butler, and then, you know, they learned from George Lincoln Rockwell. George Lincoln Rockwell learned from Adolf Hitler and others who were, right after the war, active in the white nationalist, the pro-white movement here in the States. So,
heck, what about the first and second generations of the Klan? You know, this stuff goes back all the way to the 1860s, for crying out loud.
Yeah, so white nationalism 1.0, what would that be? Would that be like Nathan Bedford Forrest, who founded the Klan? I mean, it's certainly not me and you.
I guess so.
It's certainly not me and you. So that just shows their lack of historical perspective. And, you know, they it's one thing for them, like Andrew Anglin, to not know who Billy Roper is. That's one thing. But for them to not know who David Lane was, or who Robert Matthews was, or who Ian Stewart was.
They state the 14 words all the time and don't even know who, you know, who founded the 14 words. And, you know, that's important stuff.
It's crucial. It is. And so as we, you know, continue to try to educate and radicalize these alt-right guys, I was asked a question today, at what point does the window close, the window of opportunity, where they have been told the truth about some of their leaders enough times that they should have learned that some people are bad news, that the big tent doesn't always work, and trying to just have a broad approach and for everyone to sing kumbaya together and hold hands and get along certainly doesn't work when you're being so inclusive that you allow in Jews and homosexuals and transsexuals and people who are married to Jews, and the impurity spiral, you know, that so many of them, I guess, seem to be corrupted by. It is something that has to be educated, has to be disciplined. But are we, do you think, reaching a point where a lot of these alt-right kids should have had enough warnings and enough time to be radicalized, and the best ones, the best of them, the most capable, the ones with the most potential, have already radicalized into full white nationalism? And if not, if we haven't given them enough time, you know, what do you think we, those of us who have more experience than they do, should be doing to try to help them gain that maturity more quickly?
Well, first, in my personal opinion, I don't think that window's ever going to close, because the fact of the matter is there's constantly people coming in every day. And like you talk about with your radical flank effect, they're usually going to start on the bottom of the rung. That bottom of the rung is going to be who's defined, because they're the softest in their message. So you're going to have people continually working through the rank. So in my opinion, you know, that window's never going to close, because there's always going to be people coming in. What we have to do is we have to need to be, you know, as radical as possible to get all these people further to the right and lead by example. That's the most important thing. If you lead by example, if you show them how to be strong white men and how we're capable of doing, you know, demonstrations safely and, you know, with, you know, the correct message, people will start flocking because they'll see your strength, you know, they'll see your guidance, and they'll just slowly but surely move towards you, as long as if you're a good example and you're strong and you're out there and you're not afraid to say what he said, people will flock.
And you and I have been that example for a while now, and that kind of, you know, it ticks the people off. It doesn't always make us warm and cuddly people that make a lot of friends, but a lot of people do eventually come around, and, you know, we end up hearing a lot of, I guess you were right, and yeah, you did tell me so, so now what? And that's kind of like, you know, this week, the ADL, which, for our listeners who don't know, the ADL stands for the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, and I can't quite do the guttural, like, at the end they're supposed to do, which means, B'nai B'rith means Brotherhood of the Circumcised. It's a Jewish organization that was founded when, about 100 years ago, when a Jewish factory owner killed a little white girl, raped and killed a little white girl named Mary Fagan, and since then they've been involved in committing acts of spying, of espionage, against the United States on behalf of the racist terrorist state of Israel. So the ADL is a Jewish, anti-white hate group, but this last week they have published a new article talking about Tom Kaczynski and his New Albion plan, his firing by the selectmen of the Jackman, Maine government, where he was the town manager, that the fact that he got $30,000 in a severance package in order to not sue them for firing him, and then talking about his New Albion white ethnostate idea and comparing it in quite a lot of detail to the Shieldwall Network's Project New America, our plan for Ozarkia. And actually, they can read that full article on the Roper Report website at whitenationalist.com, or they can actually go to the ADL and read it there if they think that I have misrepresented anything they said. But they basically say that, you know, we have the Shieldwall Network, and it's talking about us promoting Project New America, a plan to build Ozarkia. And they talk about it's the 40 contiguous, 95% white counties in the Ozarks, and then eventually we're going to expand after whites continue to move to our area from Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Arkansas, which are becoming darker and darker, to the whitening and lightening Ozarkia, to what we call New America, the area that's at least 90% white, surrounding those 40 contiguous, 95% white counties. But not to quote the ADL website specifically, I know that you and I have been working pretty tirelessly every single day since the founding of the Shieldwall Network for this plan, but also to do what needs to be done in terms of these public rallies and demonstrations and protest. And so alongside this White Nationalist Preppers Collective, this network that we call the Shieldwall Network, preparing for the inevitable balkanization of America when stuff hits the fan, the people need to have in real life people that they know face to face and trust by looking each other in the eye to share assets and resources and self-defense with, so that, you know, when the lights go out and you lose your internet connection, people aren't just looking at their blank screen saying, well, I don't really know anybody in real life, now what do I do? Instead, you have a whole network of in real life friends within a tank of gas or less of you that you can rely on, and vice versa, to help you and your family. That's what the whole purpose of the White Nationalist Preppers Network, of the Shieldwall Network, is. But we are also boots on the ground political activists, and for that we have established this defensive arm of the Shieldwall Network that the ADL has not written about yet, but I'm sure they will after we make our first few appearances, called the Shieldwall Phalanx. And the Shieldwall Phalanx is something that, you know, you've been intimately involved with from the start. As a matter of fact, 2 weekends ago we had a training session that you were there, of course, present at, and you are in charge of the Central Arkansas region of the Shieldwall Phalanx to help train the young man there. And I guess young man, because once again we come back to the fact that most of them are younger than us. But if you would take a minute or two and tell our listeners about the Shieldwall Phalanx and what you envision as being its purpose in the future as we move forward.
Well, the Phalanx, for present purposes, is going to serve as a defensive arm for Shieldwall Network rallies. We're going to be able to march into rallies organized and hopefully be able to defend our people if necessary. I mean, I hope it's not necessary, but if it's necessary, these young men will be trained in how to defend themselves and others, you know, that we're trying to protect at these rallies. I think Charlottesville was a perfect example of why we need things like the Phalanx. We need defensive units like the Phalanx handle situations and do it orderly and try to get our people out safer than they did from Charlottesville, that's for certain. You know, there was literally, I mean, I watched hours of footage, and it looked like there was almost no order. You know, you didn't have any real leaders leading men that I could see in some of the video. I mean, I'm sure there was some. I mean, I did see examples of leadership, but they just, I don't know, it faltered. It looked like, I don't know, it's chaos. Really, it shouldn't be like that, and there should always be a chain of command. If one leader goes down, you know, there should be another to take his place and lead the people out safely and orderly with discipline. And, you know, that in the present tense, that's how I see the Phalanx serving its purpose. In future tense, these men will be already organized, already trained, and if collapse does come, it'll make things that much easier to prepare for any situations that we can capably, you know, that we can prepare for, you know, we can within legal means. And then whenever there are no laws, well, then we'll already be prepared for any of that.
Exactly.
Basically, that's how I foresee the Phalanx serving its purpose in the shield wall network.
And to be able to adapt to any situation that arises, both pre- and post-collapse as well. When we still have rules we have to go by, and then once those rules have ceased to exist because of the vacuum of federal power. But we're also going to be using them, as you indicate, for defense of our local meetings as well. For example, the February the 17th, which is the next Shield Wall Network meeting in North Central Arkansas. And for those who would like to meet some of the members of the Shield Wall Phalanx and the Shield Wall Network at large, they can email me at roper_billy@yahoo.com. Once again, that's roper_billy@yahoo.com to get in touch with the Shield Wall Network and to get an invitation to this next meeting, February the 17th. And now, just to let people know, they can't show up and become part of the Phalanx. There's a vetting process. And once they have been accepted for probationary membership, then they'll be a probationary member of the Shield Wall Phalanx, and they'll have to prove themselves both through their loyalty and their commitment and devotion, as well as their activism, before they can actually be a formal member of the Shield Wall Phalanx. This is not something that we're going to pass out like candy. There are, you know, a number of patch members already, but from here on out, things are going to be a little bit more difficult because we're not desperate for quantity. We want to make sure that we have quality, people who are actually dedicated to our cause and to the Shield Wall Network as well. And, you know, we would talk about these developments with the Shield Wall Network growing and the Phalanx coming into fruition and our future rallies. We're looking at perhaps one in March coming up. Tomorrow, the League of the South is holding a pro-Confederate statue monument rally in Tallahassee, Florida, and we certainly wish them well. By the time this broadcast is heard, that will be history as well. But we hope that they are safe, none of them are injured or arrested, that they have a successful opportunity to communicate their message to the controlled media through White Power Jiu-Jitsu as well. So good luck to the League of the South. And we, of course, stand with them. We stand with TWP. We stand with a lot of our allies. We're not, however, bound to any other organization because we do find that there are different organizations because there are different policies and different worldviews, and sometimes they're not completely 100% compatible as far as membership standards or their own alliances. And so that brings me to an issue that, of course, I don't want to become too harsh about, but, you know, I've recently come under fire, and you're aware of this, by another podcaster who has more listeners than I do, named Mike Enoch Pinovich, who I guess has recently said on his Daily Show, a program, that he says anyone who says that he is a Jew must be a Jew. But since Mike Pinovich has said in the past more than once that he himself is a Jew, self-admittedly, then I guess that he is saying that he is a Jew. Maybe that's some kind of backhanded confession. I'm not sure. But, you know, Mike Enoch is allied to people whom we are indirectly allied with, and that's, you know, as the case may be, perhaps temporary. But I was wondering if you had any opinion personally, and of course you have a, you know, freedom to express yourself however you like, about Mike Enoch. Do you think that he is a net positive for the white nationalist movement? Is he someone that should be followed and respected, or do you think that he is more of a distraction than a positive?
I don't think he's a positive, that's for certain. I don't really see what he's really bringing to the table outside of a little bit of media ability, and frankly, he could do that behind the scenes without having to be a narcissist and be the front, you know, be the center of attention. I'll be frank, he admitted via his own internet radio system that, you know, Jewish. I mean, it's out there. Anybody can look it up and find it. If he's so adamant in his belief, then, you know, and he doesn't want to go away, he thinks he can serve a purpose, that's fine. Go serve your purpose in the shadows, like most Jews.
Right. Well, Chris, you know, in the future, I'm going to ask you to be on the air with me again, because I think it's crucial for people to really get to know the Shield Wall Network and the Shield Wall Phalanx, but most importantly, our white nationalist prepper side of the Shield Wall Network, which was the reason for the beginning of our association and of the Shield Wall Network, and the reason for its expansion and its attraction, I believe, to a lot of people who, like you and I, see that there's a great likelihood. Nothing is sure in the world, but there's a great likelihood that stuff is going to hit the fan. And we don't know for sure if it'll be an economic collapse or a war or what the case may be, but some form of collapse leading to balkanization where we will need to have friends that we can trust in real life, and like the Showalt Network is actually founded to be. And so I'm going to ask you in the future to be back again, but thank you for coming on for this first telephone interview with The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast. And for the last of the hour, I'm actually going to try to get Tom Kaczynski, the founder of the new album, White Ethnostate, to come on. I believe I'll be speaking with him shortly. But before we leave, are there any final words that you'd like to pass on to people, just in general, to the listeners of The Rope Report, about the white nationalist movement and what they should be doing to help fight for our race right now?
Folks need to get out there. The time for being worried about doxing is past. The time for worrying about feelings you might hurt with your opinions has passed. It's literally a fight or die situation. It's almost guaranteed, folks, we got maybe at best 10 more years left in this country before it collapses. That's at best. That's assuming that some situation doesn't arise that accelerates it that much faster. If you look at the demographics, I think back the past 10 years, and I think about how things have just accelerated. In my own hometown down here in Arkansas, close to central Arkansas, I've literally watched it go from 95-96% white. It's probably getting closer to, somewhere in the upper 80s now. And that's, this was a town at one point in time that you could actually count the niggers on one hand.
Right.
And it had a reputation. Well, it no longer has that reputation. And, I've got 5 kids, and I really worry about what their future is going to look like in 10 years. It's going to be a pretty sad state.
Exactly. And, that is why we do what we do. Because we want to secure the existence of our people in a future for white children. And I know that with your kids, 10 years from now, looking at potentially almost becoming a minority in the nation that was founded of, by, and for white people by our founding fathers, of course, that's a great concern to you and the natural concern of anyone who has healthy instincts and concern for their kids. But, you and I, Chris, have been working together for over a decade, actually almost 2, I guess, for about 18 years now. They've been working together, National Alliance and through White Revolution and now through the Showalt Network. But I know we'll continue to work together throughout the next 10 years. And as you said, hopefully the next 10 years we'll see the ongoing and continued increased accelerated polarization and division that we've noticed in our country happening over the last couple of years continue to accelerate and snowball, and that collapse, that balkanization that you and I have been talking about to everyone who will listen for the last year or two, will actually come before we become a minority in this nation, and then we'll have our white ethnostate, our Ozarkia, like the ADL likes to talk about. But in any event, I want to thank you once again for being on The Rope Report and helping us test this new telephone interview process, and I will talk at you tomorrow. Thank you for being on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you, in his very own words, Mike Enoch Pinovich.
I used the word Jude in that kind of context basically my whole life.
Yeah.
And even amongst other Jews, I used the word Jew that way.
Did you use...
And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way.
Did you use...
And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way.
Okay, one more time.
I used the word Jude in that kind of context basically my whole life.
Yeah.
And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way.
Now, Mike Enoch Pinovich of The Daily Show, TRS, says, even amongst other Jews, I use Jude that way.
Did you use... And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way. And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way.
Did you use...
And even amongst other Jews, I use the word Jew that way.
Now, some of his defenders would try to say he misspoke. or he was joking, or he was trolling. But there's a very specific quote by Mike Enoch Pinovich when he was discussing mixed race people in particular, mixed race part Jewish people, and he includes himself in that category. What Mike Enoch Pinovich says is that for part Jewish people to be included in the white nationalist movement, they have to have done something to earn their place. And that if they've done enough, then they buy their way in. That's literally Mike Enoch Pinovich's mindset. He admits here, in this clip I'm about to play you, that he is part Jewish, and in his own words says that people who are part Jewish can earn their way in to the white nationalist movement through their actions. So listen very carefully as Mike Enoch Pinovich admits that he is Jewish.
But in terms of who's going to be part of this movement, I would say, yeah, like, you know, it's got to be white people, and really Jews should be excluded. And if you're going to let in a mixed Jewish person, then they really have to have done something to earn that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that in my case, I did.
If you're going to let in a mixed Jewish person, they really have to have done something to earn that. And I really think, in my case, I did. The words of Mike Enoch Pinovich. Listen one more time for yourself.
But in terms of who's going to be part of this movement, I would say, yeah, like, you know, it's got to be white people, and really Jews should be excluded. And if you're going to let in a mixed Jewish person, then they really have to have done something to earn that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that in my case, I did.
And I think that in my case, I did.
But in terms of who's going to be part of this movement, I would say, yeah, like, you know, it's got to be white people, and really Jews should be excluded. And if you're going to let in a mixed Jewish person, then they really have to have done something to earn that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that in my case, I did.
And I think that in my case, I did. The words of part Jew Mike Enoch Pinovich speak for themselves loud and clear.
I have with me, next on The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, Mr. Tom Kaczynski, who is the founder of the New Albion White Ethno-State Movement in the upper New England corner of our country. And Mr. Kaczynski, welcome to The Rope Report, first off.
Thank you for having me on today, Billy. I appreciate it.
I know you're a very busy man, especially over the last week or two, and you've been giving a lot of interviews, both through the controlled media as well as through alternative media outlets, and I'm very honored to have the chance to speak with you. You know, you and I have never actually spoken before, but we've communicated quite a bit over the last few months, and so I feel a little bit privileged because, you know, the rest of the country, the rest of the world is really just now finding out, just now discovering Tom Kaczynski, but I've had the honor of knowing you for a few months now. And that actually began because you and I were involved in parallel efforts on different parts of the country, different regions of the nation, but with similar goals, because we found ourselves to have a lot of commonality, not only insofar as our perceived political worldviews, but also, perhaps even more importantly, the fact that we both lived in homogeneous rural areas where we felt that the culture and heritage and values of our local population were not being and are not being reflected by the national government or certainly by the mainstream culture and media. And we felt, both of us, a similar desire to protect our local people's heritage and their culture by looking towards the potential future when there might be a collapse or a balkanization, as we call it, or a vacuum of power at the federal level, which would require our people locally and regionally to be much more self-sufficient, to really retake control of their own destiny as a people. And so you and I began discussing, actually back in the fall, the way that New Albion, which people can read about at newalbion.org, that's newalbion.org, how newalbion.org and the Stillwall Network's Ozarkia had a lot of commonalities. We also discussed some of the differences in terms of history, in terms of culture, and how both of us, you know, were working parallel to one another,
and we respected the differences between our cultures, but we only used those differences as a way of preserving that true diversity that both regions wanted to maintain and preserve. And for anyone who has been living under a rock or in a cave for the last 2 weeks or so, you faced an almost unprecedented storm of vitriolic personal attacks and, beyond criticism, polemical pejoratives aimed at both yourself and your wife that culminated in attacks against your livelihood and against your position as town manager of Jackman, Maine. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And ultimately, that kind of led to people who resented your position and people who resented your courage and forthrightness, which I think is very admirable. You know, far too often in the, whatever you call it, the white nationalist movement or the identitarian movement, we find people who gain personal prestige and a position of power and authority, as you have, that when they are threatened with being doxxed or being called a racist, they crawfish, as we call it in Southern colloquialism. They begin to retreat and they recant. You know, they don't even pay it the Galilean honor of saying, you se mueve, that it moves. They actually just collapse and, you know, apologize for being white and for perhaps having offended someone and being racist. You, sir, deserve our honor and respect because you clarified your position in an eloquent and very pragmatic manner, but you did not apologize for being white. You did not apologize for simply looking after what you perceive to be the best interest of your people, as everyone else does and obviously has a right to. And so, unlike so many public figures who have disappointed us in the past, I want to just take a moment to thank you before we continue for your courage and your bravery in standing against the tide of criticism and personal assaults that you withstood.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Billy. And I want to say thank you also to the 100 Americans who reached out to me who said how important it was to have someone stand up and say, we're not going to back down and say, you know, white people have rights too. And it's something that I think doesn't happen nearly often enough because the truth of it is, in many ways, we're starting to get treated as second-class citizens in this country. And no person should stand for that. So I was happy to stand up for my people and to continue standing up for them today.
Absolutely. You do continue to stand. I know that you have a lot of plans for the future. You're not the kind of man who would allow what they did to you to knock you down or to keep you down. But we just need to clarify, once again, for those who may not have had access to the internet for the last week, that you were, after suffering attacks through the controlled media and personally, and your wife being attacked, you were actually released from your position as town manager of Jackman, Maine, and that occurred at a city selectman meeting. But they did not have what I would consider to be not only not a complete victory, but you got the better end of the deal, I believe, by a lot of measures, because you showed everyone that whether it's the government or a private employer trying to limit our First Amendment protected freedom of speech, they do have some consequences for their actions. And in your case, their consequences were, even before any other fallout politically happens in the future, their consequences were very immediately financial. And I hope that I'm not speaking out of school when I say what's already been published, that you received a $30,000 bonus, if you will, however you prefer to phrase it. You received a $30,000 payment in exchange for your agreement not to sue them for basically violating your First Amendment rights. And now you have the capital and the time and growingly, increasingly, the name recognition to continue expanding your leadership regionally and, of course, nationally as well through the name recognition that you've gotten. You know, when I began speaking with you, I've actually learned a lot from you over the last few months because I always felt like your organizational skills and your leadership were, and I think I told you this, were at least a half a step or a step ahead of mine, especially the fact that you had actually gained a position of local influence and power, and you were using that actively for the best interest of your people and your local citizens, not just in Jackman, but in the entire northeastern region. And we discussed how you had plans to work politically, legally, and financially to increasingly help your people and to aid your people, both now and in any kind of future scenario where there might not be powerful federal government to step in and help, or where your interest might diverge from such. But as much as I admired learning from you and appreciated learning from you how it could be done nuts and bolts on day-by-day effort, you begin to write in newalbion.org these pointers for activists, whether they may be, whether they're, you know, in New England or here in Ozarkia or out west, you know, with the PLEs in Montana and Wyoming, or even people in the Pacific Northwest. But the same thing that I've been trying to encourage people to do, but not actually locally has much success as you did, how to become a person of influence in your community and how to use that influence through completely legal political action to improve your people's plight. And you put that to work and are continuing to do so. I know that you're going to continue to expand your ideas about New Albion. And I understand that now that this phase has kind of worked in your favor with the capital and the free time and the name recognition increasingly, you probably have a book in the works, and I was wondering if you would take a minute or two and tell people about this formation of an idea for a book, perhaps based on your experiences.
Yeah, thanks for that. Right now I'm still putting together the outline of it, but it's a really interesting story about how quickly things came together. Basically, you know, 8 days ago, this time of day pretty much, I was sitting there and I was just running my small town and running at the benefit of all people who live there. But as you might know, if you know anything about the Northeast and the far Northeast like this, we are an overwhelmingly white region. And so when I think of things, of course, I naturally think of how we're going to serve the benefit of white people. And I think that's for the benefit of all citizens, because if you're in charge of governance in any sort of public sector capacity, you're thinking of everyone whom you serve. And one of the disturbing things to me over the course of this is learning how it's considered inappropriate in polite society to go ahead and say, you know, we're going to deal with issues that impact the white community and the white people as such, considering that everyone else can go out there and make their own case. So to bring it back to the question about the book, what I'm going to be writing about is, you know, where white activism goes from here and how we can mainstream this. I'm entirely certain there are a great many people out there who want to support this, because I've gotten a lot of mail, both in terms of the written word and electronically, with people who thanked me for speaking up and who want to say these things but are unwilling to do so for fear of intimidation. And I do understand that there is a machine out there that slanders and defames everyone who goes out there, and if you try to put your story out there, they do not allow you the opportunity, which is one reason why I come on independent media and broadcast, such as the Roper Report and any other venue, you know, of whatever identification, because I think to express our free speech, we need to get out there and talk to people. So the book probably is about 2 months out, but it will go into some detail about what happened to me. Sort of the plans we were thinking of New Albion, trying to preserve, reclaim our culture, heritage, and identity, and give some ideas for how people going forward can expand the movement. Because one of my criticisms of people who've been working in favor of white identity is they too often have gone down pathways, I think, that make it difficult for us to attract new people. And I think we have a lot of support that we don't know about that's just scared and won't come out because of the consequences they perceive as existing. And so to some extent, that means some of us have to find a way to mainstream the idea. And what you'll see me doing more in the future, besides building New Albion up here in northern New England, is articulate this idea of white civil rights, which is the natural pushback against this idea that we are second-class citizens, where we don't have the same legal protections, the same access to financial resources, or even the ability to articulate in the public space our concerns for our people the same way that anyone of any other ethnic group, as well as certain other idea groups, don't. And I know that that hypocrisy is at the heart of why so many Americans are angry, upset, and frustrated, and it's something that I think is as true for the good people of Arkansas as it is for the people of Maine.
Absolutely, and we definitely look forward to reading your book, and I know that it'll be advertised on newalbion.org as well as on The Rope Report. And speaking of which, you know, you and I discussed over the last couple of days the fact that Heidi Byrick of the SPLC claimed to have first heard about newalbion.org through the Rope Report website, and whether that is true or not, or whether that's just simply more SPLC self-serving hyperbole, it's really hard to say. But, you know, if I played any role, of course, as I told you, in ultimately what happened to you negatively, then you have my regret, not because we worked towards New Albion or towards Ozarkia, but because it would be, you know, a twinge in my conscience if that were to have happened. But the fact that you stood tall and stood firm through it all and continued to do so, I'm certain in the end you will feel that it's been worthwhile, and certainly is worthwhile, because, you know, now when you're in a position of authority and leadership like you were, to a degree you are, especially when you're using your own name forthrightly as you did, to a degree you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, to be doxed. And now at least you no longer have to have any kind of trepidation about that or fear of that happening, because you literally have nothing to lose. You are in the front ranks now. And as you become a more active leader and a more publicly known leader, as you've seen, you know, there are going to be people who choose to turn away from you, but then you're going to have a lot of people who will thank you for standing up and be attracted to you for that. And like you and I have discussed, you're absolutely right that there are a lot of people who are just, you know, sub rosa supporters of ours who kind of quietly cheer us on from the sideline, and it's more than entertainment to them. It's very encouraging to them, because we say the things that they're not quite willing to say yet, not quite ready to take the risk of saying yet. And I've told you about here in Arkansas, there are business owners in my community who've privately expressed their support, but simply don't want to get involved publicly because they would lose their business. And we understand we don't want anyone unnecessarily to lose their business, to their livelihood, or to blacklisted. It's like a reverse McCarthyism out there, as you know now. But ultimately, more and more people are stepping forward, and they're supporting us, you know, financially. They're supporting us through showing up at our public events, and they're quietly supporting us, as many people have you over the last week. Now, if someone were interested, because I know that, you know, $30,000 is nice, it's not going to be something you can retire on to the Bahamas, but if someone wanted to help you out and your family out financially, kind of as a gesture of respect and honoring the sacrifice that you have made, is there a way that they can do so?
Absolutely, yeah. If you go to www.newalbion.org, that's A-L-B-I-O-N, you'll see there's a post there about multiple ways that people can anonymously contribute to help. For people who want to send things by mail, reach me at newalbion@protonmail.com. I'm happy to share that. I have a web fundraising page. And I also encourage people to consider following me on gab.ai. A lot of my social media posts are there. That's usually the fastest way to get information. Premium membership there to support me is $5 a month. That lets me keep speaking and will give you access to me. And as Billy can tell you, I'm an extremely accessible person who is happy to take time to expand upon ideas, listen to yours, and be helpful. I think that network is incredibly important. It gives me the opportunity to have more freedom in continuing to speak out, which is what I intend on doing, because during the course of this whole event, the effort has been made not to just destroy my good name, but to also destroy my ability to economically exist. And one of the interesting things of this, since you talked about, you know, the efforts of the SPLC, I know the ADL also had an effort after me. And one of the things that people do not understand who are outside of the leadership of you know, free speech in this country is the amount of resources that are pouring in, often through foreign actors, to enable these hate groups who stand against the idea that the majority of Americans should have the same rights as other Americans, and against our protected First Amendment's rights, not just the freedom of speech, but freedom of association. So it's incredibly important, especially if you're someone who's sitting on the sidelines, that you help the people who are out there doing this, because time is not on our side, to be honest. We need to work. We need to begin to organize. And one of the reasons I was willing to do what I did, which I did publicly and openly in my name, rather than being doxxed, I'd say it's more that I was connected and discovered, is because we need people who have the courage, integrity, and decency to speak up in favor of our future. We are to realize that the future that we want for our children, it is incumbent upon us and our responsibility to go out there and to speak to these issues. And we can do so in a way that is very accessible, it's very legal, and it's very appealing. I am sort of a pragmatist. I've had to be working in government, and I've worked towards 95% solutions, realizing that that's where success would be up here in New England. And there's a lot of work left, but as Billy rightly noted, now their constraints, which previously restrained me, are off. And I can't help but feel the people who came after me did so thinking that they went after someone in a small town in the middle of nowhere who would just buckle. But even in the quiet corners of our country, in the forgotten hills and valleys and mountains, there are men who still have energy and strength and know how to resist. And I am just but one of them. And I know there's a lot more of us out there. And to those listening, don't lose hope. And we're going to keep up this fight. And for what I can bring to the movement, I think, is a voice that will make that path more palatable for people in the future, so that way when we exercise our First Amendment rights, other people won't have to lose their jobs for saying it's okay to be white.
And in the meantime, your example of courage and bravery, literally not being intimidated by our enemies, not being intimidated by the enemies of free speech, and refusing to crawfish, refusing to back down, refusing to apologize for stating what you believe. And just for clarification, it's not like you were in a city selectman meeting, espousing your personal racial or political views, and you weren't using a city website or any city materials or your position as town manager. You were stating in private venues on your own time, not using city time, your legally, First Amendment protected freedom of speech, protected rights. And so it had nothing to do with job performance at all.
I want to add one point to that, which is that it very clearly said in my dismissal, and this is a matter of public record, that I was terminated without cause, which is legalese for saying they had no reason to fire me. I had had a review of my work not 3 weeks earlier and was rewarded with flying colors and a raise. I had been working diligently to save community health care in my community and had projects to put in an expanded park and to create new opportunities for young people to remain in our small rural community, which is a very nice place in a very quiet corner of Maine. So obviously when they came after me, it wasn't for the job I did, but it was more for the example of saying that certain speech would not be permitted. And that was the reason why a settlement was reached. And, the only reason why that happened is because I wanted to spare the town any more unwanted attention. Not because the town fundamentally disagreed with what I did. There was a very divided opinion about that, and I had a great many more supporters than the media would make it appear. However, the select board did not take that position because they wanted the media attention to go away, and they did what they did. So we came to a mutually amicable agreement. And now we go forward because, while it was one of the best jobs of my life, I'd always be grateful for the opportunity to have served the people of Jackman. The national spotlight shown on me has given me an opportunity to serve as just one more advocate in a growing chorus of people who are speaking up for white civil rights and recognizing that we need to start speaking now for our own identity, for our welfare, for the pride our people have in our many achievements, and reclaim history in that sense, and to begin an honest conversation about the challenges we face today, like breakdown of the family, drug usage and whatnot, and work towards making sure that resources also come toward us and not just other groups for the help that we need. And I think that's a very pragmatic position that is something that should be accessible to everyone, is legally approachable, and that's kind of where I am trying to take this. As I build the New Albion movement up here in New England, I think we're going to pass 100 members here, given all the support and background that I've been able to pull together, and I'm very excited about that. I'm excited for those opportunities, and just want to say, again, thank you to all the people who have expressed their support and offer encouragement to those who are not afraid to stand up. While it is scary and it is difficult and there are challenges, you know, we are equal to this if we just show a little bit of courage. And, you know, some of us are being the tip of the spear now so that others don't have to. And we need you behind us to make it work. So hope, you know, you'll stand up behind us. And God bless those who do.
Absolutely. And Tom, you know, you are the kind of man that made Western civilization great once and will make it great once again. We certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule, especially this week, to talk to us here on the Roper Report. We look forward to, when that book comes out, having you on again, and perhaps even between now and then, if you could spare a minute, I would like to have you come on someday, and perhaps when the drama has died down a bit, just you and I discuss at length the idea of white ethnostates as they might organically evolve naturally, and perhaps how different regions of the country could establish those kind of culturally organic and healthy ethnostates in their own regions. And you and I have discussed that already, but I know that our listener audience could definitely appreciate from your wisdom, as I have, in that area. I also want to encourage everyone, as they look forward to your book, to continue to go to newalbion.org, and especially to make sure that they find a way through one of those social media or online financial platforms to make a donation and a contribution to help you and your family, to help your political efforts up there, and to help the idea of white ethnostates, but most importantly, to show respect for your courage and your commitment to our people. And I cannot thank you enough for everything you've done just over the last week, and we are all grateful for your sacrifice and for your courage, sir.
Well, thank you, Billy. I appreciate it. I look forward to having many more interesting conversations in the future. You know, I think the way you've talked about things, about an impending balkanization, is a message that many more people need to take heed of and to begin acting intelligently in preparation, where we can live lives where we have good things we enjoy now, but be ready to survive if more difficult times come. Thank you again for the kind words, and I look forward to speaking with you then.
Thank you, sir.
One of these things is not like the others. One of these things doesn't belong. Can you tell which thing is not like the other by the time I finish this song?
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fireworks are to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll send a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Give the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.